Turn, if you will, to Psalm 95. I want to share some things with you that I think are going to be really encouraging to all of us. And the title of today's message is Entering into His Rest. So Psalm 95, we'll begin at verse 1. How many of you have got there yet? You know, I remember as a younger man, I still see some Bibles, and that's good, some actual physical Bibles. But I remember as a younger man, I used to have to wait a little bit longer sometimes while people were flipping, especially if I, you know, Psalms weren't hard to find, but sometimes, you know, you get in Hosea or something and they're like, and now they open up their phone, they touch Hosea, you know, it's kind of nice in some ways. I wish that they had, like, on your phone, a thing that would, when you turn the page, you would hear it. And that'd be great. You turn the page, I'd hear this flipping. Of course, the thing is, depending on what size your phone is or what you're using, there'd be flipping going on all the time probably because it resets to the size of your screen. But anyway, Psalm 95, starting with verse 1. Oh, come. I'm inviting you. Actually, the psalmist inviting you. Let us sing. Everybody say sing. Sing. No, nobody wants to do that. Okay. Oh, come, let us sing unto the Lord. Let us shout. Everybody say shout.
Shout.
A little louder. Shout.
Shout.
There you go. That's pretty good. Shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before his presence with thanksgiving. Everybody say thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Yum. No. Well, you know, when this was written, there wasn't a country that had a Thanksgiving Day. I like Thanksgiving Day. How many like Thanksgiving Day? Yeah, it's a good day. Usually get around family and lots of food, and it's a good time. But it says we come into his presence or come before his presence with thanksgiving. That's a good thing to know. Let us shout joyfully. Everybody say joyfully. What if you're not in a good mood? Can you shout joyfully if you're not in a good mood? You can shout. I've
been married to that a couple of times.
You know, not in a good mood, and she's like, "Gah!" Usually, it's not that way. It's like, "There's a car. Where's your driver's license for sitting over there and telling me how to drive?" You know, how many of you have a person in your family who likes to help you drive? What's that? You are that person. Yes, Lisa's grandmother used to actually have a little license that was made up for her, and it was a backseat driver's license. She was always, Don. It was so good. Anyway, you can shout joyfully even when you're not joyful. I don't know whether you know this or not, but you can rejoice even when you don't have joy. It's actually something you just do sometimes by faith. Just a thought. So, shout joyfully to him with psalms. What's that all about, psalms? Well, that was, you know, when David did a psalm, it was musically connected. So there was the idea of instruments actually was involved. So we do that. We do that when we get to the ministry time following this preaching time every Sunday. We have this ministry time, and we don't call them psalms, but we have songs that are, you know, as unto the Lord, and they're encouraging. For the Lord is a great God, and the great King above all gods. In his hand are the deep places of the earth. The heights of the hills are also his. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. In other words, God's everywhere. Oh, come, let us worship. Everybody say worship. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Everybody say bow down. Okay. Some of you, that might be a little complicated. You know, it's, oh, your back, you know, maybe bowing down isn't as easy as it used to be. Just a thought, just while we're here. When was the last time in worship that you bowed? Because I don't know that that's on our charismatic Pentecostal full gospel list necessarily. We don't bow as much. You know, we have certain things that we do because that's what we do. And there are other things that we maybe don't do. Just a thought. And then it says, let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. Everybody say kneel. Now, for some, that's going to be tougher than others. You know, you've had a knee replacement, that's a little tricky. And probably there are some who kneel when they pray in the room. You know, you do that. I pray a lot in the car. It's not a good idea to kneel in the car while praying going down the road. That's probably not a good idea. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, as in the day of trial in the wilderness. When your fathers tested me, they tried me, though they saw my work. For 40 years, I was grieved with that generation and said, it is a people who go astray in their hearts, and they do not know my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Interestingly, the Lord led me to this message actually back around Palm Sunday. For some reason this year, maybe just because God's so good, I was kind of getting my stuff together. A lot of times I don't know what I'm preaching until Saturday morning or sometimes Sunday morning. It just happens to me, you know. I just, the preparation during the week, I open up, I'm looking at stuff. Usually there's three or four things on my mind, but maybe I haven't written it all out yet or figured out how I want to put it down. Sometimes it's a message that I've preached before and I go find it. You all know that I've got a filing cabinet full of messages, and now most of them are actually on my iPad for about the last, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years. So there are subjects that the Lord will put in my heart that are near and dear to me, and I'll go try to see what's going on. But back really before Palm Sunday, the Lord kind of was directing me Palm Sunday to fit with Easter, and then an unusual thing, the Sunday after is not something that I'm trying to connect to the other two in any way or that I've got any idea. I mean, usually I'm just like, most pastors are just happy they made it through Easter. Just, yeah, the holiday's over and now we'll just kind of get back in a different groove. But sometimes God just works that way. And I did not know, of course, that my mom was going to accelerate into her permanent place of rest. Didn't know that was coming. Back on Palm Sunday. I mean, we knew Mom wasn't doing well, and we weren't sure how long it would be. And we kind of had a sense that we needed to prepare for things and had been doing that actually for quite a while. But let me just ask this question. How many of you want to enter into God's rest? Okay, first thing, some of you are thinking, like your mom? No. That's not what I'm thinking. My son, Joshua, after I put a picture of Mom up and, you know, mentioned that she had passed, he responded to that on Facebook with, I can't wait to see her again. And if any of you saw it, I responded to his response by saying, can't wait? Yes, you can, Joshua. I really think I want you to wait a long time, is what I said. And then, LOL. And I do. I would rather my son at least wait until I'm gone before he goes. How many of you know you don't like burying your kids? And some of you have had to do that. Bless you. You know, the struggle that is, that's hard. So, yeah, I'm not talking about entering into the level of rest that my mom is in. And yet, at the same time, there is a place of rest that God wants us to enter. Even now, all of us in this room. I was there on Friday, and I was sitting next to Mom. I actually got up that morning, and I don't know how, I just knew. And then I thought, well, I better rush over there, and it was like, no hurry. Oh, okay. So I did a few things, took care of some things, even came out to see how the churchyard sale was going, said hi to the ladies. And then I headed over there, and I got there, and I thought, yep, it's going to be soon. I don't know how I knew. And I went in and sat down next to Mom and just slid my hand under a blanket. She was resting. They had, you know, given her medications to help her rest. And I had my hand on her shoulder, and a couple of people came in and out a couple of times, and I conversed with them. And then I would just talk to God and just relax. And I was kind of watching, and I noticed her breathing was getting a little bit further apart, you know, the breaths that she was taking. And I looked over, and saw her breathe, and then I saw a nurse walk in. I looked back over, and she still hadn't breathed. And the nurse got a little closer, and I said, I think she just took her last breath. And the nurse checked as my phone rang. Lisa, at 11:14, called me, and she had just taken her last breath. And it was very peaceful, very sweet, and I'm very happy for her because she's where I want her to be. She's in the Lord's presence. My mama didn't die. She lived. She lived. Yeah. You all think you're alive. Whatever. She lived. She sees things that are eternal. She no longer lives in the shadow where we live. So the Lord, I think, picked out this message because he might even want to use that to emphasize. We think of it, we say rest in peace. We think about rest and we think about her being at rest, so rested. And I'm sure she is, beyond anything we can imagine. And I want to add to the reality of that because I think we can enter into more of that than sometimes we think. Within this psalm are some keys to entering into his rest, so let's press into that a little bit today. I think that'd be good. And by the way, why would I want to press you into rest? Well, I think because we all need it. Now, when you think of rest, maybe you're thinking of ceasing from your labors completely. Have you ever had something, though, that you did that just rejuvenated you? Even though it was, for some people, work, but for you, it was just like... Actually, I live with a person who does this all the time. She recreates by organizing. Don't hate her. I am so blessed. I'm so blessed. But sometimes just doing stuff can be really recreational almost. It recreates you. It enters you into a place where you feel like you've got it done now. Any of you other people in the room like that, where it's hard for you to lay down at night if there's something on your mind that needs to be done? You'd be better off just go ahead and do it than to try to lay down. I will pray for you. I've never had that problem. I can go lay down in bed. But there are keys in this psalm that I think are very useful. And I want you all to begin to enter into his rest. That is a place where you feel like everything is going the way he wants it to go. And you know you're in the flow of what his spirit wants to go on in your life. And we have those days when we have that, and we have other times when it's hard to have just because there's all this stuff going on and we can get agitated. But I think God wants that for us. So I want to encourage us to enter into it. Now, I want to note that this Psalm 95, is a call to worship. And when you get a call, it's not God demanding something from you. It's not something he's trying to force on us. A call is an invitation. Tell your neighbor you have been invited. Go ahead, tell somebody you've been invited. Yeah, I'm done. God's not saying that he wants something from us. He's saying that he wants something for us. That's a big deal. God wants something for us. So let me ask each of you something. If Jesus were to manifest right here, right beside me, in this service today, what would you do? It's an interesting thought, isn't it? All of a sudden, I mean, because he's done it before. The disciples saw him the day after his resurrection, and he's still in that form right now, so he could just pop right in here, paying no attention to walls or anything else. He could just be here. And I just have to ask the question of myself and of all of us, would we behave any differently? Would we do anything that we don't normally do? Would we run toward him? Or would maybe a few of us run from him? You say, well, if you ran from him, something's wrong with you. Not necessarily. You might be smart enough to know, I need to, oh boy, things have not been the way they should be. If he were right here in visible form, would we sing? Would people who can't carry a tune in a bucket sing? Maybe they'd shout. Yeah, I think. Or maybe even dance, or kneel, or bow down. What would we do? What would it look like if we literally saw the physical presence of Jesus, bodily form, right here? That would get your attention, wouldn't it? Some of you have seen Jesus, had a vision. You could see. Mark talks about seeing Jesus. He always says he was right over here. And he saw Jesus. What would we do? How would we behave? Would our worship look any different? I have to confess, mine might some days. Some days that they it might. And there are people who would be like, well, you know, shout, dance. You know, all those physical things, it's just not me. So let me get this straight, if you're thinking that, by the way. Are you saying that if Jesus stood right here, that the things you normally don't do, you still would normally not do in the presence of something abnormal? I got a feeling you do all sorts of things you might not have ever done before. If Jesus, I would probably do things at a level that I've never done before, at least if not things I've never done before. If Jesus were standing right here, I think I would be kind of overwhelmed. And I don't think I would be held back by anything. I think we all would. So a couple of days before my mom passed, she was talking about dancing with my dad. Yeah, the nurses said they couldn't get over it. She was just wanting to dance with Dad. There were several things, by the way, that happened to my mom. My uncle died. My uncle Richard, her brother, passed away about a month ago. And I think I told you this. I waited a couple of days before I got over there finally to tell her. And I wasn't sure she would. I mean, after I did tell her, I had to tell her again because she couldn't remember things anymore. But when I went over to tell her 2 days afterwards, the nurses came up to me before I got to mom and said, hey, your mom's been doing something different. She's been asking for Richard. I said, when did she start doing that? Oh, 2 days ago. When I went to my Uncle Richard's funeral, I told my cousins, and one of them said, yeah, Dad must have stopped by on his way up to heaven. Tell her to get ready. Wasn't too long. She was asking about Dad, and she wanted to dance. She was talking about dancing. And I got to talk to my brother about it because he had talked to some people over there on the phone as well at Kingsbury, and they mentioned to him the dancing thing. And he was like, you know, Dad didn't dance. I said, you know, I really don't ever remember Dad dancing. And Jeff said, no, he maybe a couple of times. I said, well, I do remember seeing him dance at a wedding. So, but just, you know, it wasn't like he was Fred Astaire? No. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't, you know, he didn't. I used to like to dance, but I would scare you now, so I won't do it. And Dad didn't like to dance. Mom, I don't think I've ever said much about this. Mom and her sister were a big deal in Lancaster, Ohio, because they were twins and they were identical. And they both played piano, but my Aunt June played more than Mom. She was better at it. And Mom sang. Aunt June would do the harmony, and Mom usually sang the lead, and they both danced. And Mama liked to dance and married a guy who didn't really care about dancing much. And my brother then had to tell me the story. He said, yeah, they were at some kind of a Polish festival, and they were striking up the band, and there was polkas going on, and Dad wouldn't dance with Mom, so Some guy came by who was a little tipsy and said, "Hey, would you like to dance?" And she got up and danced with him. Yeah. And from the way the story was told, Dad wasn't extremely pleased about that. The thing is, I told my brother, I said, "Well, she's dancing with Dad now, because what we won't do on this earth, we'll have no inhibitions about when we get into the presence of the Lord." How many of you believe that? Yeah, the stuff that holds us back here will not hold us back there, because it'll be gone. It'll be gone. But that then made me think a little bit too. Okay, what if we fight to push aside the things that inhibit us now in this life? What if we started getting a little bit crazier here? Would that allow for there to be more of an awareness of his presence? Because Psalm 95, if you will, is a prescription. It's what God, you know, kind of says to enter into his rest, to get into his presence, to have that experience with God. Psalm 95 has some things in it, and really all the Psalms have things in them. And that's why we do what we do. And I want to enter in more to his presence, more into his rest. Psalm 16, verse 11 says, "In his presence is fullness of joy." I want that. You want that? Do you want the fullness of joy? Do we have to wait to get to heaven to get the fullness of joy? I don't know. Maybe the full fullness, but if I can get from just half a tank to three quarters of a tank, I'm going to be better. Right? Psalm 3, verse 19 tells us that times of refreshing come from his presence. And today's text said we enter into his presence, or suggests that we enter into his presence with thanksgiving. I've tried to be a much more thankful person the older I've gotten. I was just doing it the other night. Last night? Well, I think it was last night and the night before. I just lay in there, getting ready to fall off, go to sleep, and just thinking, "Thank you, Lord. I have had such an amazing life. I am so blessed." Doesn't mean I haven't gone through stuff, but I'm just thankful. And the more thanks I give, the better. And the more aware I am of how good he is. And thanksgiving is not thanksgiving until it's Thanksgiven. Which means sometimes I have to more than just think about it. And I do. Sometimes I just worship. Even when I'm just alone, just lift my hands and worship the Lord. And I've heard some people say, "Well, I just don't feel it like you do, preacher." I admit we're different. Everybody's different. We already kind of talked about that little difference where my wife she gets recharged by doing stuff. And sometimes I just want to sit down. Like, sit down already. Stop. And she measures her time, and she's very organized, and things get done because she's that way, and sometimes things don't get done because I'm not that way. So I get it. It's refreshing how she does that. Everybody's different, and I realize that, you know, some people are more demonstrative. But what if that being demonstrative thing is something that God actually meant to be in all of us? I've noticed how children are just so amazing because they rarely can hold back their enthusiasm. And if you try to tell them not to make a noise, sometimes it gets worse. They start moving. We can't get over how busy our new little granddaughter London is. She just, all the time, her little arms are moving and her legs are moving and she's just going for it. And kids, they don't think about how they look. They just think about how they feel. It's kind of cool. But if we do everything only based on when we feel it, some things are never going to get done, especially if you're me. Like, oh, yeah, I didn't feel like mowing the grass. Well, I mowed yesterday for the first time because somebody kept reminding me that it needed to be done. She was right. And I refuse to let feelings run my life. You know, if you do what you do based on how you feel, then you have fallen into the disease, if you will, of modern day America. Because this country is definitely, if it feels good, do it. And you say, well, I just don't do it because it feels good. Yeah, but if you only do it when it feels good, you won't do it. That makes you the same as if it feels good, do it. What's the difference? So I encourage you not to let your feelings run your life. And in fact, I believe that you can run your feelings. Did you know that? Science is starting to prove that, by the way, now. You can run your feelings. We used to sing it. If you want joy, you can shout for it, you can dance for it, you can jump for it. The joy of the Lord is my strength. Some people think that's not true, but it is. You start acting joyful, you end up being joyful. You start giving thanksgiving, you start being thankful. And the more thankful you are, the more thanksgiving you'll give. And the more thanksgiving you give, the more thankful you'll become. It doesn't take Jesus standing here in a visible form for me to make up my mind that he's here. How many of you know Jesus is here? We may not see the manifestation of him right here, right next to me, but he's here. He's every bit here as much as he was in the upper room with the apostles. There was a manifestation that they saw, but he said, lo, I am with you always. And as the old preacher said, so just get low. He's here. Now, some people will say, yeah, but there are manifestations. That's true. That's true. There are manifestations. And I think if you want to see more manifestations, you maybe start where you are and recognize the presence that you can in order for you to see more of what is that maybe you've been missing. But it doesn't take Jesus standing here in a physical form for us to know that he's here. Look again at Psalm 95. I'm going to start again in the last part with verse 7. Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, as in the day of trial in the wilderness, when your fathers tested me. They tried me, though they saw my work for 40 years. I was grieved with that generation and said, it is a people who go astray in their hearts, and they do not know my ways. My ways. He's talking about the ways to enter into his presence, the ways to keep yourself focused on him. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. The thing is, this is referring to an event that's actually in the scripture also. In Exodus chapter 17, that's what he's referring to in this psalm. David is reminding the people of a story that they all had heard before. And here's the story. In Exodus 17, it says, then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. So Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand the rod with which you struck the river, and go, and behold, I will stand before you there on the rock of Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and the water will come out of it, and the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he called the name of the place Massa or Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" You know what bothers God more than anything, I think, that we can do? It's to act like he's not what he promised, always with us. That's what they were doing. They were questioning whether the Lord was with them, because they weren't seeing what they wanted to see when they wanted to see it. I think he hates it when we question whether he's with us, because he promised. He promised. He promised he'd be with us. In Deuteronomy 31, in Joshua 5, in Hebrews 13, each of those places says, "I will never leave you or forsake you." And what they did was they began to think that he had left them, and they, instead of worshiping him and honoring him and being thankful to him, they were waiting for him to show up rather than them showing up and trusting that he was who he said he was and would do what he said he would do. I've had that problem. We've all had that problem. Thank God we live in the time of grace. You know, it's always fun to look back on the people in the desert and say, "Well, I wouldn't have done that if I..." Yes, no, whatever. He said in Matthew 28:20, "I am with you always, even to the end of the age." This level of life, as I mentioned earlier, is a shadow of the greater reality. A greater reality that's getting closer to all of us all the time. So, here's what I think. I think we should just, with childlike abandon, go after it. Even when we don't feel like it, go after it. I think if we did, we would see more of that reality than we sometimes see now. If we would get just a little crazy, you know, might shout a little. Some of you do. Most of you do. Might sing a little louder. We even have a song that says, "Sing a little louder." We might lift our hands or bow down or show in our physical bodies that we recognize his presence. And I believe that's a prescription for entering into his rest. And the more we enter into that reality, the more it becomes a reality. I want to be the one who enters into that reality. I want to be the one who gets touched by God.